Blog Talk Radio.
We are on the air.
Hey there. Can you hear me okay?
You're coming loud and clear.
All right. Well, hey, I just sent out a tweet here about Feedback Friday, and you've got several blog posts out there about that. But, Elizabeth, how about leading off with telling us what's going on here with the Feedback Friday?
Well, basically, we are kind of reclaiming this FF hashtag and turning it into Feedback Friday, trying to get something constructive going on out there in Twitter land. The idea is that you, on Friday, will send us out a tweet, let us know that you are ready for some constructive criticism, and we will, or people will direct message you and give you some feedback on what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong as a member of the Twitter community. And, you know, all through the week, of course, we encourage you to tweet about things that you know, see going wrong, like things that you don't like that people do on Twitter, and then use that as an impetus to make those changes on Friday and give those people feedback on how they could be doing Twitter or tweeting a little bit better.
And just to, on that point right there, we're wanting people to get feedback from their followers. We're not actually, unless we happen to be your follower, going to be offering a critique of your tweets. We want people out there asking their followers to give them private feedback through a DM or some other means.
Right, exactly. You know, and the idea is that it's reciprocal. So you post that you're ready for some feedback, people will send you direct messages, and then, of course, you will return the favor, and we challenge everyone to do at least two of those every Friday, to send out two DMs to people that you follow, giving them some feedback in return, and of course, tweet and let us know that you did, and use the hashtag Feedback Friday.
Awesome. And we want to make sure that, you know, everybody knows that also this is not just for individuals. There's plenty of businesses out there or organizations with Twitter accounts, and they need feedback as well. So it's not just for individuals.
Absolutely. Everybody that's out there in the Twitter community, you know, as we say, we're all learning how to do this social media thing together, so why not help each other get better at it? And, you know, businesses, individuals, everybody could always use a little constructive feedback.
Yeah, from an organizational standpoint, you know, people talk about the closed loop system, you know, and where you're putting things out there and you need to have feedback so that you can continually improve your signal that you're sending out based on what your community at least expects for you to be sharing with them. And so just like what we, you know, normally find an application in a business sense, as individuals, we want the feedback as well, or at least to some of us want the feedback as well to improve.
Right. I think everybody wants to feel useful or liked, and there's no better way than to listen to what people actually want.
Yeah, now I have met a few people out there like, you know, take it or leave it, this is who I am, and, you know, I don't need your feedback. And I've met some people like that, but I think they're in the minority, really.
Absolutely. Well, we've got a caller on the line, so let's put them on the air and see what's up there. You are on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
I don't know if we got any lag with the phone bit as well. But anyway, hey, if you're there, chime in. So, hey, we were, you know, looking around. Right now, it's been the FF on Twitter, the pound FF or hash FF has been the Follow Friday. So we were looking to get out there and kind of reclaim that. And, that's been out there. It's been dominant for a while. And there's a lot of the same types of hate follow recommendations that are out there. And I think that's been good. But I think there's also an opportunity here to get out there and to encourage people to give feedback. Because we're not I think society is just a little bit more polite than used to, you know, giving feedback to individuals. You know, if you take a look at Facebook, you don't have to let somebody know, hey, that they're making too much noise. You can just hide them. You know, so when really, if these are your friends, they would stand to benefit if maybe you just kind of let them, give them a helpful suggestion. And it's just not something that in a broad sense that we are used to, but with these new social tools that are out there, it definitely enables a two-way conversation. It doesn't have to be public, but even privately, you know, where organizations and individuals can hear from their constituents more and apply that feedback to modify, you know, what they're doing or to fine-tune it or to get some suggestions. I mean, this goes into product development, customer service, all kinds of applications. So I think there's not a lot of that going on right now just because we're all used to being so polite. What do you think?
It also goes into, like, keeping in touch with your Aunt Beverly. I mean, you know, you've got these relatives who are new to Facebook and they're not quite sure what they're doing, and they're doing things like the Friendly Farm or whatever that is, or Mafia Wars, and they're sending you all these invites, but you don't really want to. You want to keep in touch with them, but you don't want to keep getting these notifications. And giving them feedback like that is a great way to basically allow them to keep in touch with you without having to limit your contact with them.
Yeah, and depending on, I guess, where they're coming from, some people can get really blown out of proportion with the feedback. And take it really gravely, seriously, personally. And so to try and avoid some of those types of surprises, we're suggesting that, hey, you let folks know that you're open to feedback. You know, actively let them know, hey, send me a DM, a private message or a direct message, and give me some feedback. I want some. Then it's more solicited.
Yeah.
And our hope is that by kind of saying, okay, Friday is the feedback Friday, that way, okay, you know, we kind of create this stage, this this opportunity for people to hang their shingle out there and say, hey, I'm open for feedback, and then maybe and to get some, and to just continually improve. I had an opportunity earlier today to provide some feedback to a follower that I met through a healthcare chat out on the West Coast, so we've not ever met. But they appreciated it and shared it themselves, the feedback. So I think it's welcome. And if you say that, hey, I'd like it, then you're going to be more accepting of the feedback that you get and maybe not thrown off guard. So, okay, we were doing a little looking around earlier, and Elizabeth ran across a similar kind of Feedback Friday concept with regard to somebody that put something out there earlier this month, which was a little bit different than what we're doing. What was that again, Elizabeth?
Yeah, basically what he'd done was he created a Feedback Friday, and his concept was that if someone was looking for feedback, I think on his blog he kind of advertised himself as somebody who loves technology, kind of a tech lover and a social media junkie, as many of us are. And so maybe being someone with a little bit of experience in Twitter and Facebook and the like, he sort of offered his services to giving people feedback on how they were doing. So it was more like you could go to his blog and you could post your Twitter handle, and he would on Friday come and give you feedback through a direct message as well, but it was sort of specifically you were requesting it, and it was that feedback was only coming from him. It wasn't something that you were maybe putting out, you know, to all of your followers. It was just kind of a private interaction through direct messages where he was giving you feedback on how you were doing.
Yeah, so that was interesting. Could we tell if you got any traction off of that, or
it sounded like from the blog post that I read that he did have quite a few people that he was giving feedback to, but there were only a couple of comments on this particular blog that I was looking at where he asked for people to, you know, sign up essentially for his Feedback Friday. But it also sounded like he kind of had an interesting experience with it, just in that you know, some people thought that he was being too harsh, and he felt that he was being honest and was trying to be useful, but he got kind of some bad reactions to some of his feedback, which is, you know, a risk that you take, surely, as we've talked about. But I think that, you know, it points to one of the things that will hopefully be a strength about what we're doing, which is that it's more of a community process, what we're trying to get started, as opposed to just one person kind of judging the output that you are, you know, producing.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's that points to the fact that, you know, a third party may not be a good judge of what you, you know, what you normally say. You know, maybe your personality is to be very punchy and very aggressive, and that's what your followers are used to. You know, and so that would be, it's kind of hard to use the same measuring stick against anybody out there. So providing a coaching type of thing on, you know, on with feedback on your tweets without really knowing you, or without being in your audience or knowing what you're about. So kind of an anonymous feedback, I think you're going to run into those types of things. So I can see where that wouldn't work out well. Well, I think it might be good to ask you know, anybody that wants to call in to participate here. I know we've got the chat window up at on the site. Over at Blog Talk Radio, they could submit if they created. They've got to create an account to be able to participate in the chat function. But let's talk about those types of things that annoy people, or that, you know, the types of things that we might suggest to our friends, just kind of in general, to stir on that type of conversation. As far as, hey, you know, what kinds of things do you find annoying that you wish your friends would do less of? Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, in terms of this being about individuals and organizations, one of the things that I hate on Twitter is automatic feeds that post to Twitter accounts from websites automatically when they're updated. Because while sometimes the annoyance is that it's constant, most of the time for me the annoyance is that I can tell that it's a feed and I don't see its purpose. You know, there's no person behind it. And even if I want to respond to it, I don't feel like I'm responding to an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. I know, like, the blog I operate at home, we do have a feed set up to that Twitter account, and we do get feedback from a lot of our followers about, you know, we need to tweet as people from that account more often. But I think ultimately it's about finding a nice balance. Like, sending a link once a day is one thing, but with all your content is, people don't want to... don't want to see that so much.
As far as what are you talking about there?
The Radio Sweethearts Twitter feed, we sometimes ignore that for days at a time, and it's just posting automatic updates from the blog, and that's only once a day, so it doesn't, nobody's complained about the volume, but we've heard feedback from people that, you know, they want to hear us tweeting. You know, they don't want to hear, like, only the blog posts. It's all about putting content on Twitter that's specific to Twitter instead of just pulling it from somewhere else and always having this one thing pointing to something else.
Gotcha. Yeah. There are, you know, that kind of brings to light, you know, you were talking about these things that automatically post. There's these tools that are out there like ping.fm. That's a real popular tool that kind of lets you broadcast your update to the multiple social networks all at the same time. And which really, you're not there. And so I'm trying, you know, I know this came up, I don't know, maybe a couple months ago. And I may be old-fashioned with this, but I kind of, my expectation, at least on Twitter, is that if there's, you have a tweet there, then you're actually on Twitter. There's a human being there. This is my expectation, is that there's a person there, and,
right,
and if you do respond to that, that they'll reply back.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the problems with things like Ping FM, you know, you're not there. You know, you can post to, sure, you can post to Twitter and Facebook at the same time, and I guess MySpace too, because it's now cross-posting as well. Just struggling for relevance there, but if you do all that automated stuff, you're not there for the conversation that can sprout around what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really, if you go to Facebook and post a status update there, you're on Facebook. Once that conversation starts, you're there for it. Same thing with posting to Twitter.
There are different kinds of, and really, I guess that goes back to what your constituents are, what their expectations are of you, you know, and of that account, too, because there are certain accounts that are definitely broadcast things, like, let's say, for example, breaking news, you know.
Yeah.
They kind of say, hey, we're here broadcasting, we're not really, that's what we're doing, and that's how we're going to use Twitter, and if you don't want to follow us, that's okay. So I don't think anybody has an expectation of responding to breaking news, or I forget, you know, there's many of them out there.
Yeah, but one of the things that a lot of the spam bots do is that they are broadcast, they are broadcast rather than social. And one of the things the spam bots do is they take that broadcast, but they make it seem like it's a person. And that's what makes that annoying. Other than the fact that spam and spam is just dishonest in general.
Right, yeah. You know, we manage some accounts for, say, like Barcamp Memphis coming up. And it's doing a lot of trying to get the word out about what's going on, you know, when the event is, trying to let people know what it's about. And so it does a lot of broadcasting with probably, you know, a smaller amount of actual conversation back and forth to that account. And it's been my experience, and, you know, we're coming up on our second bar camp, that that sits well with people. That's okay. That kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah. And it always becomes more social as the event gets closer.
Yeah. So hey, so we got these, you know, the fake mechanical updates that we're talking about that people don't care for. What other kinds of things are out there? Might we find ourselves suggesting to a friend? Friends don't let friends tweet what?
Well, I personally find that TMIs are a big problem. Too much information. I don't want to know that. I know that there is a social, you know, that this is social, and that's what it's about. But there are some things that I don't want to discuss in any company. And I actually can recall specifically that many months ago, I was following on Twitter Tay Zonde, if anyone's familiar with the YouTube sort of viral video sensation of Chocolate Rain that came out many years ago. I don't know I don't know why I was following him on Twitter. But I was, and it was kind of funny for a while because he was Tay Zonde. But then he started tweeting about some horrible nose surgery that he had, and it was graphic, and it was disgusting. And I was just like, Tay Zonde, I don't want to know about this. So I promptly unfollowed Tay Zonde and then tweeted that I unfollowed Tay Zonde, and exactly why, because I did not want to know about what was inside of his nose. And for me, that is a big one.
Yeah. I had a friend a couple days ago who tweeted that she just had her first walk of shame for the month. And I'm just like, that's personal. I didn't really need you to announce that to me.
No. It just became the tweet of shame at that moment.
Yeah. At which point you were showing no shame, so I don't know if it's a walk of shame anymore or, you know.
It's true. It's a
regular
a...
occurrence.
Oh, God. In which case, it's just even worse.
Yeah.
So I guess the bottom line is there is just a lot of stuff that people don't want to know about. And maybe, you know, I don't know, people don't have any filter. There's no question in their mind, like, would I talk about this in front of, you know, what their litmus test is for what they will or will not post. And I know a lot of people who aren't of this sort of Web 2.0 I mean, I hesitate to use the word generation because, you know, it's multi-generational, but they feel like we share too much, whether it's through blogging or it's through Facebook statuses or it's through Twitter, whatever the means, they feel like we share. But I think there is still a line and there's still a point at which, you know, you're gonna risk turning some people off big time on Twitter talking about certain things.
Yeah, and maybe it's just certain people, too. You know, you talk about there's a generational thing, and so... I think that, you know, I have heard the 20-somethings talk and make mention of the fact that the 40-somethings talk about things that you shouldn't be talking about in public, you know. But the 40-somethings are fine talking about certain things that are, you know, common to the 40-something crowd. But for the 20-somethings, that may be TMI, you know, for the particular topics they have.
Right. And honestly, I don't think that there's like a single right and wrong for which topics are okay and which aren't. I think in general, well, okay, take for example my friend Zach. He's Low Fidelity on Twitter. I can't recommend that everybody go and follow him because he is extremely vulgar, very opinionated. But he's a great guy, and I love following him on Twitter because he has established this persona that not exactly Lenny Bruce. His vulgarity is not like Lenny Bruce caliber of funny, but it's, you know, it is quintessentially him. And in that case, I don't mind it so much. But if my mom got on Twitter and started swearing up a storm to try to get attention, it would just be annoying because that's not her. That's not the persona she's developed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, like, the whole TMI thing, it's almost up to the follower rather than the person being followed. But if you know you have a wide variety of people following you, like Tay Zonte, then it's probably a better idea to play it safe.
On the blog, on the website over at socialexpedition.com, Joanna, Chef Joanna from over in Nashville, piped in and shared with us a website called twittersnooze.com where you can just kind of temporarily mute somebody.
Yeah.
Like maybe in this example that Elizabeth had, they're going through a surgery or something, and they've got this temporary thing they're being very graphic about, where you can just kind of temporarily snooze them. Another example that she gave is when people go to conferences, you know, so like at Bar Camp, we've got Bar Camp coming up on November the 14th. People that are there at Bar Camp are going to want to tweet, kind of share what, you know, what's going on. And so those folks that are not at Bar Camp have to kind of endure, and if they're not interested, endure a lot, you know, these tweets about people being in so-and-so's presentation and on and on and on, and it would be nice to be able to mute them probably for those folks during that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's that's one of the things that I like about the Twitter client I've been using called Brizzly. It's BRIZZLY.com. It does have a mute function like that built in. So, it's a really nice thing to have, to be able to turn somebody off for a day or two without having to unfollow them.
Well, that's good. I didn't know Brizzly had that feature in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, you know, invariably we all get involved in some things that we want to share with you know, our constituents and whatnot. And but along there within our constituents, there are those who just don't care about that particular thing.
Right.
And, that's a nice feature. Speaking of which, you know, we were looking at Twitter's new list feature earlier today. And so they've got like a beta group of folks out there, and luckily my account is in that beta group, so we all get to kind of gather around the screen and look at those lists where you can group these views, create these lists of people so that when you just want to hear about, let's say, social media, for example, you could have a social media list, and those people are commonly talking about social media or partying on Friday night or just different kinds of things. And much like a feature you were talking about, Matthew, that folks have been used to with TweetDeck for quite some time. Seismic is another desktop application that has that type of grouping function. But this one here resides right on Twitter and has some advantages to that piece as far as being able to channel your friends or your followers on there. So that's one of the ways that's coming along soon that people will be able to take advantage of. So, you know, in that, I think, hey, that's a great idea. But again, it's better to give feedback to the people rather than just quietly ignoring them. You're not doing them a favor by hiding them or ignoring them.
Right. Ultimately, you're just encouraging them.
Yeah, right.
Like, what's that saying? Silence is acceptance.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that. Yeah, and that, you know, you agree with whatever somebody's being said, and you know, in this situation here, I can definitely see where people would take it that way. You know.
Yeah.
So hey, what are some of those other things? Friends don't let friends tweet what? You know.
I think a friend.
One that comes to my mind is just like an Uzi, a battering, you know, of retweets, to where, you know, within the matter of sometimes even within the same minute, there are multiple tweets with a link to this and a link to this other thing, and it's like, I know you didn't have time to read those three articles you just sent three separate tweets about, you know, and I find that to be a little annoying because they're almost devaluing their endorsement of said article because, you know, they didn't read it.
Well, to me, too, it gives off a slightly different impression, which is that sort of like the boy who cried wolf. Like, I feel like you put all these tweets out. I guess it makes me think that your opinion is not that discerning. If just every little thing that comes down the radar you think is good enough to retweet. You know,
right,
there are certain
right.
people. There are certain people that I follow, and if they retweet something, they do it so rarely that I think, wow, this must be really funny, or it must be really valuable, because they are a little bit discerning with what they'll post, and I think that is part of the impression that I get from that.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, I know people who retweet a lot of things, but, you know, the people that I keep around, the people that I keep following who retweet a lot are people who I've come to know are really great curators of content, you know? Like, they do have great taste.
Well, that's a great point. That's a great point. And that, you know, and on that curation function, we get into this when we do these what is social media type presentations, going back to the Forrester's ladder of technographic participation. And there's a rung on there, a new one that's been kind of recognized, is that curator function. And so these people that are providing these links, whether they know it or not, they are serving as a filter, this curator. And, mm-hmm. So I guess, yeah, if you're more selective and you only put the quality stuff out there, the private stock, you know, then people are going to value that more. That's great. There's that curator.
Yeah, like the New York Times Twitter feed can't feed the entire paper. It can't feed every story in every day's paper. So you know that the stories that they do tweet are ones that they honestly believe are the most important things of the day. Most important or most interesting stories mm-hmm. of the day.
Yeah, and we've seen, you know, even our own local traditional media outlets evolve. I think there was a time, remember, when we saw all of them were posting, you know, every article I think that was coming out, they would post a link to it, and that just wasn't well received, you know, wasn't well received over time.
Right.
So even they have begun to curate their information as well, and that's definitely appreciated. And speaking of that social technographics ladder of participation, one of those rungs on there is the lurker, or the spectator, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And just so you know, I just got a DM, Elizabeth, from a friend of mine who's going to be calling in, but he just wants to lurk on the phone because they can't get to this particular website from work. It's blocked at work. So anyway,
oh, okay.
So be expecting that just as a heads up.
Right. So you can call in and you can definitely call in and just listen. Elizabeth has the number in front of her. But basically, when you call that number, it gives you the option of wanting to talk to us, in which case you hit 1, or you just ignore it, and then you can just listen in.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, okay.
And I can give you that number again. It's 347-857-2345.
Nice, friendly number. Hey, so, okay, what are some of the other things that friends don't let friends, blah, blah, in the social network.
I see tweets sometimes that are just not so much on the retweet side, but that are just the entire 140 characters is Twitter handles and at symbols. And it's just like, even if there's a sentence in there somewhere, like, you know, it looks like a Mad Lib of Twitter handles where there's like a verb and an adjective and then every other word is a Twitter handle. And you, it's hardly legible, frankly, and I hate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate when people are, you know, trying to promote their blog or their website and the only links they provide are to that website. You know?
Oh, right.
Right. We actually made that mistake with Radio Sweethearts for when we first started using Twitter for that blog. But, you know, all the links we provided were to our site, and that's just it looks selfish, and it looks like that all you care about is yourself. And really, like, we're all pulling content from other places, so why not occasionally throw a link out there just for somebody else or to somebody else's site?
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, like, if you do something nice for somebody, somebody else will do something nice for you. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's all just a great big circle of doing good things for one another.
And it is, surprisingly, people are very supportive out there. I've always loved that about the whole social networking online, is that they have time to be helpful. And I think they can be more helpful online because it just takes sometimes just less than a second, you know, fractions of a minute to be helpful to somebody somehow, you know. So that's very neighborly. I really enjoy that. The, you know, you're talking about putting multiple Twitter handles in a tweet. And I, you know, kind of thinking back on that, you know, going back, you know, maybe a year and a half, you know, we saw that much more frequently when there was a tweet up. And so somebody would tweet out, oh, it's good to see Twitter handle so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, you know, and really, you know, name off with their Twitter handles everybody that was there. You see that less frequently anymore, you know, more now the tweet is like, hey, it was great to see everybody, you know, last night at the whatever, or, you know, earlier. But acknowledging retweets, you know, this is where you see that also, where, you know, say you've got 8 people that have retweeted some tweet of yours, and it's a very good form to thank them in public for retweeting. But now all of a sudden you've got 8 people or more, you know, that you're going to reach out to and express some appreciation for retweeting your stuff. And so lately I've been seeing those tweets jam packed with nothing but handles and a thank you for the RT. What other ideas come to mind when trying to do that? You know, you got a handful of people that you got to thank for retweeting, because you do appreciate the fact that they did retweet your stuff. But you don't want to be obnoxious with the tweets.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to send out one to every single individual, lest you then clog everybody's feed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a tough balance. It's a tough balance to find. I mean, every once in a while, sending a post with, like, 8 handles and thanks for the RT, every once in a while, that's fine. But there are, I know people who do nothing but that.
Right, I agree. And I think that it's, you know, saying thanks for the retweet, yeah, you know, that's one thing. And I can see that you've written that. And so if I don't want to read all those people's Twitter handles, then I won't. But I guess more what I mean is people who are trying to put together some kind of coherent sentence about saw so-and-so and went to the this and the that, and every single proper noun in the sentence is a Twitter handle, and there's like 12 of them. It just gets really cumbersome to look at. And it feels like there's no real content there. It just feels like promotion of other people at that point, whereas a retweet thanks seems a little bit more genuine, you know? I don't know. And maybe that's just me, but that's kind of the impression that I get.
Right.
I wonder if, you know, hearing you describe it, I wonder if it's maybe the situation where somebody uses the at symbol instead of saying AT, they just use the at symbol and don't realize that, hey, that actually becomes a clickable thing. on the receiving end of the tweet. So that, you know, I wonder if there's some of that involved in there. That's good stuff. The I thought, as you were describing that, Elizabeth, I thought maybe you were going to say that that all 140 characters are used.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen that too.
Long. You know, and I know there's a great feeling when you can have a one-line tweet that you know, is nice and short but meaningful. So sometimes that, you know, the 140 characters can seem very expansive, especially when you're having to read. You know, all of a sudden, I have to read 140 characters? I mean, we've gotten so accustomed to this that now, you know, a whole tweet looks like a paragraph, and we just can't, you know, it's got to be good stuff.
Yeah. And you know, especially when, like, when what you're saying is extremely dense, there are a few things that feel better than a twush, which is a tweet that is exactly 140 characters. But there are people who try to do nothing but, and they end up with, like, extraneous punctuation marks. They end up with, like, too many spaces or a space, comma, space. And, you know, it just looks bad, and it doesn't make you seem any smarter when you do things like that.
Hey, we do have somebody in the chat room who's asking, are multi-tweets healthy? So how do you eliminate all the spam at the host? I'm not sure how to interpret that question. How about you guys?
I'm not entirely sure either.
For whoever that is in the chat room, I have a clarification question. By multi-tweets, do you mean like the LunaWeb account where there's three of us tweeting? Or is it like managing multiple accounts as one person?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like tweeting from, having multiple people tweet from one account, I think can be healthy. So long as like they have some way of identifying who is talking at any given point. We use our initials here. Some people will use their whole names. And there's all kinds of different ways to separate that from the tweet. I think right here we're using the caret. At NPR, they use a slash, then the initials. Basically, I think multi-tweets are healthy so long as you can tell who's speaking at any given point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember the exact handle. It was it may have been an airline, not Southwest, but maybe it was JetBlue. Who they in the description, in the bio of the handle, they would show who at that period of time was manning the Twitter handles. So, you know, from 8 to noon, it may have been Joe and Sue. And then from 12 to 5, you know, it was you know, a couple of other folks. But they would just go in and update the bio just to let people know who was manning, who the people, who the humans were behind the corporate Twitter handle.
Which is well and good, but I never look at the bio.
Oh.
Like, once I'm following somebody, I just read their tweets in my feed. I don't go to their Twitter page to read what they're saying. So plugging that in the bio is a solution, but it's certainly not the optimal one.
Yeah,
throwing your name at the end of the tweet, I think, is the way to go.
You know, I find it okay myself, because it's like, let's say, Southwest Airlines. I know that person is Christy, you know, and so because that is the person that tweets for Southwest so far, and it says it right there. In fact, in the description, in the bio, she's got a link to her actual personal Twitter account in case you wanted to, you know, follow her over there as well. So, definitely no standards on this right now. Different people trying different things to see what, you know, what works. And you know, there was when you work for Dell, they've got the advantage of having a four-letter business name, and so they would do, like, you know, Lionel at Dell, Richard at Dell. You know, so kind of concatenate the name with the our the business name, but not everybody has that luxury.
Right.
The other question from the chat room is there, how do you eliminate all the spam at the host? And that may be connected to the other question. I'm not quite sure how to answer that one either.
Oh, how do you spam at the host?
How do you eliminate all the spam at the host?
I'm not quite sure what that question is asking. There are two tracks to take that I think we can take with the question. The first being, like, if somebody is spamming and you need to report that, like, if all of their links go to the same place and it's obviously a scam, there is a report. You can block somebody on Twitter and you can report them as spam. They're both on the right-hand sidebar when you look at their Twitter page. And when you report somebody as spam, you do block them as well. That's a great way to just eliminate. Blocking is a great way to eliminate spam in your feed. You know, you can also just unfollow somebody if they're simply annoying you rather than blocking you. And Twitter seems to be fairly responsive when you report somebody as spam. They tend to err on the side of caution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that they have been getting more aggressive with that because I know that it kind of dilutes the value of the site. And
right.
They know, yeah, they've got to do some kind of policing out there, and it's not just a matter of, oh, if you don't like the way somebody tweets, you just don't follow them. Well, people have been very crafty with their aggressive messaging,
mm-hmm.
and now it is necessary for Twitter to get in there and be the police a little more. And I'm glad to see that they're more receptive to feedback from people calling 911, for example, on somebody and, hey, we have a spammer in progress over here.
Right.
And then yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one of the odd things on the feedback, I know as more and more families are getting connected online, you have, and it's not just Twitter. I mean, this also applies definitely to Facebook and Facebook updates and other types of live streaming platforms where when you have family members, typically, say a parent or a grandparent who's out there following you, their perception of what you should be sharing is obviously more constrained. But yet at the same time, you run into things where they'll share something about you that nobody thought that was going to be, in the family. They'll write something on your wall. That's kind of a classic thing these days. And so those, I think, those types of feedback, I think it's probably best to have those conversations offline. The feedback that you would have with family, and not don't send Uncle Bob a DM about, hey, I'd appreciate it if you didn't do whatever. I think a phone call goes well, because I think family, much over friends are, for the most part, they really have your best interests in mind, and they really meant no harm at all, and get extremely sensitive when they think, oh, they've crossed some line and done you wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my experience. Hey, what other kinds of things out there, as far as friends don't let friends, what other kinds of feedback do you think people will be giving one another?
Well, it looks like we've got a caller, so let's see if they want to chat with us or not. Hold on just a second. All right, you're on the air.
Oh, hey.
Hi.
Hi. How are you doing? Sorry, I dialed in because I couldn't get through the website. Feedback. One thing that's bugged me is just the inability to separate different themes of people's transmissions. I like to follow people for work-related stuff and that's great. But if maybe 10% of their posts are about work and 90% are about their family for the weekend, then suddenly I wish I could, you know, temporarily mute them outside of business hours or something. Not really a good way around that, I don't think, because it's nice to have personalized content, but you don't always want to know everything about everyone.
Yeah, that is tough. You know, I don't know, I guess, what, you know, if two tweets are about business-type work-related things that are professional interest to you, and then eight tweets are about what they're doing for the weekend, and I can definitely see the imbalance there.
I mean, does it beg the question of having, like, a work tweet account, or work Twitter and a personal Twitter?
That could work, yeah. But then, you know, the work Twitter gets too dry if it's all work. It's kind of hard to find the right balance. And then, say, if you're only doing work, then you start falling in the trap of maybe I'll just syndicate my blog stream and never actually touch this because it's all work anyway, or maybe it's not fun because it's only work, so you're not going to be motivated to remember to go in there unless it's on your editorial calendar. I don't know exactly how you find the right balance because each of your respective audience members is going to have different desires for what they get out of your feed.
Yeah, I tried that for a while. I had two Twitter accounts, and one was going to be, okay, more work-related stuff only, and then this other was going to be more, you know, after hours, Dave. And it didn't work out for me. It was a lot of work to try and keep up with that, and I wound up just retiring one of them and just going back to one. And you know, it was an experiment. It didn't work out for me. Maybe it works for other people, but. One of the things that I kind of find as far as channeling my content is there's certain things that I would say inside of, say, Facebook that I wouldn't tweet. And so I kind of segment my updates that way. And so for that very reason, I don't connect the two. I'm sorry, what's that?
Oh, I try to do that too, but then occasionally I'll forget, and one of my lesser used services will syndicate something I didn't mean for it to. Like, maybe I'll favorite a song on Last Night FM, and it shows up on friend feed, and that's good, but then it's showing up on Facebook, and nobody cares, and oops.
Yeah, I tried friend feed for a while, but the fact that it was syndicating everything I bookmarked in Delicious and sending that to Twitter and Facebook, just like, you know, these are my bookmarks. I think I just need to disconnect this and, you know, have it not sent anywhere but friend feed.
Yeah, it only works if you really stay on top of managing every single inflow and outflow. And if you don't, things just start going, you know, thinking about it and it looks bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily want everybody, I don't necessarily want to broadcast every single thing I'm interested in. You know, you know, maybe it helps. Maybe it's nice to, like, show off a little bit and, you know, have people see that I'm bookmarking a lot of graphic design blogs, a lot of copywriting blogs. But they don't also need to see that I'm, like, bookmarking Real Ultimate Power, which, you know, is a site about ninjas and how sweet ninjas are.
Yeah.
There's a Facebook application out there called, I think it's Selective Twitter Updates. And those are those tweets that end with a pound FB.
Right.
And so that lets you, just within the tweet itself, dictate whether or not it's going to go both to Twitter and to Facebook.
Yeah, which is kind of a nice feature because that's actually kind of a nice idea because occasionally there is the tweet that would be a good, like, Facebook status update. But it only works, like, if you know you're doing that and if you're willing to, you know, manage the resulting conversation on both sides.
Right.
Now, you know, this is just my perception, you know, so for me, my expectation on Twitter is that, okay, when you send a tweet, you're there. You know, you're in the conversation. You can hear, you know, all the chatter in the room, so to speak. But on Facebook, that's not as true. My expectation isn't as solid or strong that you're actually sticking around, you know.
Right.
And that may just be me. I mean, where are you guys at on that?
Well, like a Facebook status update isn't necessarily a conversation starter. It might just be a straight-up statement. Not every single update that anybody puts out there is necessarily a conversation starter, but especially with Facebook status updates, sometimes it's just people talking about the kind of day they're having, and they don't necessarily want or need people to comment on that. Other times it's the opposite, and they're begging for it, like the one about the balloon boy that turned into the Fresh Prince reference.
Oh, it was so amazing.
So the caller, as well as Elizabeth, where are you all on that as far as, you know, your expectation of participation between, say, Twitter and Facebook?
I mean, I think that what you said is completely where I am in terms of that I don't expect that there's a conversation on Facebook, but I do expect that there's one on Twitter. But I think that's because of the way I view the utility for both of those. Because, like, the utility for me of Facebook is keeping in touch with people and keeping up with what they're doing. And the utility of Twitter is the conversation. So I definitely expect people to be present there, whereas I really don't on Facebook. I kind of expect if I see something I like, I'll leave a little comment. Maybe they'll come back to it later.
Mm-hmm. How about the caller?
I wouldn't say I'd be completely. I certainly have slightly higher expectations from Twitter, but I recognize that not everyone is going to be able to respond if they tweet through a text message or something. They might not be able to text their responses for a while, especially at replies. DMs you can get through email, but at replies are a bit risky to turn on depending on what you've got going through a text message. Facebook, I imagine it would be a bit more responsive if the tools were as well-developed as ones for Twitter, where you can get 100 different ways to check your messages, and it's just a separate platform altogether.
I try to follow
conversations both ways.
Yeah, say caller, we're picking up probably a lot of noise on that mic, on that handset or whatever there.
Sorry.
You broke up a little bit there. Could you, like, just repeat that last bit again?
Oh, I said, I try to participate in conversations I start or join on either service, but I expect less of a real-time response on Facebook. But even with Twitter, I don't expect everyone to be able to get back right away, especially if they're traveling, and I know that. If it's the middle of office hours and I expect someone to be at work and they're tweeting, then, yeah, I'd probably expect them to be able to get on top of responses, but not all the time.
Mm-hmm. If you
approach somebody whose follower ratio is seriously out of whack, then you kind of know before you even go get started that they're probably not going to respond anyway.
Right. You know, now that you mention that, I do have a lesser expectation when I see the tweet has come from a mobile device, and I know, okay, they may not be sitting there watching the stream and actually ready to engage in a conversation. I do have less, now that you bring that up, I do have less of an expectation when I see that happen. When it comes from a text. Now, I use the web. I just go to the website. I use Twitter.com. I've tried different applications before, but for some reason, I find myself, when I'm on a computer, going back to Twitter.com versus a Twitter client myself. Well, hey, we're getting down to the last little bit here, and I think it'd probably be really a good idea to rehash what it is we're trying to do here. With this Feedback Friday, and that is, we want people to mention the kinds of things that they wish their friends wouldn't do without singling them out, without identifying them, during the course of the week. But then on Friday, if you are open to some feedback, you know, send out an update. Let people know that you want some feedback and to DM you or to send you a message inside of Facebook, and that for your friends that do that, we want you to at least maybe two people give them some helpful suggestions that are going to make them give them something to think about and improve in being a participant in this conversation that's going on. And after you do, hey, if you want to mention the fact that you did give somebody some suggestions, hey, tweet about that also. Again, not saying who the person was, but just that you did, and that will hopefully encourage other people to start thinking about giving other people feedback and helping them along, being helpful to the folks that they follow, rather than just ignoring or hiding them or leaving them out of their channels. Did that about sum it up well? Any other adders in there?
I think that's it.
Okay. All right. And, gosh, you got really quiet. I don't know if I'm talking to myself at this point or we got logged off.
Radio noise filter. Cut off like nobody's business.
Well, that worked very well. Well, hey, we certainly appreciate the folks that that called in, and then also, you know, we've got the number of folks that are here in the chat room as well. And no doubt, this is going to be available online still. So check us out back at thesocialexpedition.com, where you'll be able to get to this. And we are going to be doing these types of real-time podcasts at least once a week on various topics. So thanks, everybody. And any last wrap-up thoughts there? Elizabeth or Matthew?
Just hope everybody will, get involved, and let's really get this thing taking off next week.
Get involved. Just stay cool. Be cool to each other. Stay classy, San Diego.
Exactly.
Yeah, hey, if you can make it to the tweet-up tonight, that's going to be over at 5:30 at the Osaka in Cordova. Hope to meet you there before the premiere of Where the Wild Things Are. We'll see you out there, everybody.
See ya. Bye-bye. Thanks.